Wine Academy podcast, providing food for body and mind. My name is Carrie Harrison and I have a Master's in Education degree and a Bachelor's in Science degree, as well as a certificate in plant-based nutrition from A. Cornell University. Today we're talking to Bradley Wheeler, a fellow vegan and book lover, about what it means to be vegan in a non-vegan world. Welcome, Brad, to Vegan Online Academy podcast. It's absolutely fantastic to be speaking with you today.
Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you here. So everyone's always very interested in why people became vegan. So can you tell us, just before we get into this conversation about vegan identity, can you tell us how long you've been vegan and what spurred you to make the change?
Okay, so I've been vegan since about 2015, and I'd actually just come back from France and been there for a year. And it had been on my mind for a while that some of the philosophers and other people that I respect intellectually, they had mentioned it. And I thought, you know what, I need to look at this. Of course, when I was thinking about it, I went to France. But then when I came back, it's like, well, you know, I have nothing else to do, so let's look into it. What was interesting, it wasn't actually the intellectual arguments. I decided that the first thing I needed to do was just to look at the slaughterhouse footage. And I had seen it before, and I didn't really, you know, it didn't really move me either way. I'm like, that's just how the meat is made. It's like, you know, I need to sit down with an open mind without any preconceptions. And just watching it that way again, I was like, you know what, this is not. And it was actually then that I decided, well, I can't do this anymore.
I was just going to say, it's interesting because you're not the first person to say to me that they watched slaughterhouse footage before and maybe years go by before they actually do anything about it. And it's interesting that you almost have to be in the right place or be open to it in order to watch that footage and then do something about it. Because I think many people would think, well, when you see what happens, surely that's just going to be an obvious point in your life where you're going to make a change, but not necessarily the case.
If psychoanalysis has taught us anything, it's that we're very creative in avoiding things or not processing things the way they should be.
Absolutely, I agree. There's definite blocks that go on in your mind to stop things filtering through that might be uncomfortable to process. So I remember myself going through three very distinct phases when I became vegan. First, the euphoria and excitement of making the change and realizing that I could play my part to help animals and the environment whilst also being healthier. Then as I researched more and more, the second phase that came upon me was that I really hit a wall and went through a painful period of feeling very down about all of the discoveries that I had made about the enormity of the problem and the enormity of the suffering, and watching that slaughterhouse footage and lots of other things about the pain that millions of animals are going through every single day, 70 billion land animals a year, in fact. So I went through that period of depression, and then finally I worked through this pain and came out the other side refreshed, energized, and ready to make a difference. What was your experience like, and how did you mentally work through the challenges of becoming vegan in a non-vegan world?
I come from a little bit different perspective. So a lot of people, they tend, and this is kind of emblematic of Western society, and that we tend to think of externally, like what can we or can't we do, which is important, right? But I thought of it more like internally, like what's the best thing that I can do? And I said, well, the best thing that I can do for myself and consequently for other people is to stick with it and go with it. Because I did think about those, but I didn't see it so much as like a moment of helplessness or despair. It's like, despite all this, how am I going to live my life now? And that's the thing in general, is that a lot of people see that as despairing. And I get it. It is an enormous problem. But you can also think of it the other way, in that it's also like an enormous opportunity. You can literally do anything and it'll be helpful. There's so many things that you can do.
That is definitely what brought me out the other side. It was like this focus on, right, what am I going to do? How am I going to help things? And like you say, anything that you do is going to have a positive benefit. The other thing that I came across when I became vegan was that the word vegan itself conjures up a certain image with some people. And indeed, when I was starting out with Vegan Online Academy, I was advised by quite a few people not to even use the word vegan, just not to go there. And I remember one friend who had a marketing degree, and she said to me, you know, the word vegan tells me so much about a person. When I hear vegan, I know not only how that person eats, but also how they vote and their political leanings. And people make a lot of assumptions about your business, she said, if you use the word vegan. Now, I actually disregarded that advice because I'm very proud to call myself a vegan and I use the word a lot. And I believe that the more people hear the word in a positive way, the more positive connotations it will have for them. So, how do you feel about this stereotyping and boxing in of vegans?
It's strange because I've heard that before, but to me, it's not really saying much when people talk about that type of stereotype. Well, I know how you vote, or I know how you live your life, or it's like, well, that's not really an argument against it. It's very different than like the stereotypes of past social movements. So you have, for example, like the social movements of like a Latino social movement. Mexican, if you said they were dirty and they need to be deloused, then it was linked to a lot of political action and things like that. However, when you talk about vegans, it's like, well, I can make assumptions about you. Well, are they negative? They don't really make a statement on whether it's negative or positive. And I've heard it in that context as well. It's like, well, you're not really saying anything positive or negative. So I don't understand. We can take the assumption that it's negative, which is what most people mean. They mean something negative by it. You can say the same thing for anybody when you look through that lens. It's like, okay, well, you vote Republican. So then, well, we know what you feel like on certain issues. So what? Most likely what you're going to buy and what you're going to do. When you look through a corporate lens, it does dehumanize people. It makes them into these caricatures. It makes them into stereotypes. And so to me, that also doesn't make sense. But there's still this perception. We have this negative perception. So what do we do about it? Well, you can look at history and that. I mean, there's two things. Either you can try to change it or reclaim it. And usually it's a combination of both. So like you have the case of Sandra Cisneros. She wrote a story called Woman Hollering Creek. She was a feminist writer. It basically goes along this mythological story in which the story is that there's this poor woman and she gets married by this guy. The guy ends up having two children with her. Then he leaves her, takes the children with him to this other. That's the mythological story, right? For the mythological story, the way it ends, when the guy leaves, or before he does, she takes the children, she drowns the children. She also kills herself. And then when she gets to heaven or the other side or whatever, it's different in every version. They say, okay, well, we realize what you did. It was out of despair. So we'll let you into heaven. But before we can do that, you have to get your children from the lake. And so she's therefore forever searching for her children in the lake, hollering because she can't find them. The sexist theme of that is that it's the man who basically defines. That's basically what Sandra Cisneros is writing about. And so, although in her story, it's like a Mexican man who works in America, he takes her from Mexico from a poor family. And then basically, once they get there, he becomes a different person. He doesn't take care of her. He abuses her, he cheats on her. They find out that there's a creek, and it's basically called Women Hollering, but in Spanish. And it's the only thing that's named after a woman that isn't a virgin or a prostitute, which is important. And so it was more of a symbol of empowerment. And the reason why I cite this story is because it's also a way, it wasn't just the message, but the story itself, the art itself, was a way of reclaiming a stereotype about Mexican women, not just in American society, but in Mexican society. So I think that art has a powerful role. If I wanted to give you the TLDR, what do we do? How do we overcome it? It's like, well, be the best person you can be. Do the best that you can do. Like I've had many people, they were surprised by me. Like, oh, you're vegan. I didn't know that. It's like, well, what'd you think a vegan was? Probably because they had all the hippie stereotypes with bandanas and tie-dye shirts and stuff like that. And then they find out, it's like, no, actually, I did kickboxing, I did wrestling, worked out, I read, I do all these other things. Just show them who you are.
Because there's this idea of the annoying vegan stereotype.
Yep.
And as you were just alluding to there, that it's actually not necessarily the case and that we are very individual and different as people. So can we even say that there is a vegan stereotype? Being a vegan in a non-vegan world throws up a lot of challenges. Talk us through some of these challenges and how you manage them.
Like one other thing, which I'm sure that many other vegans and wanting to be vegans come across as like the whole restaurant nightlife scene. But you can't underestimate that there's a social aspect to it, right? Eating with others is a ritual, and it's it's been one for, I guess, since the beginning of mankind. Eating is just one of, it's something you do with your family, you do with your community.
It's interesting that it's much more than just the simple act of eating food. It's everything is so tied up in our customs, our traditions, our memory, our ideas of who grandma was and how much she loved us. This is all wrapped up in food. So it's not just a simple act of eating, which in itself is very easy. I mean, eating vegan food is easy, but there's so many more layers that go to it, and are wrapped and bound around that. So I'm quite interested in this idea about what you put up with, what you tolerate as being okay, in terms of when you meet up with friends and family.
The way I handle it is that don't interfere or preach to me, and I'm not going to interfere or preach to you. So if I go to a restaurant where they serve meat, then I know that I'm going to have to sit there and hang out with those people like that. But then also realizing too, like what I'm getting into. For an example, that I had a friend who invited me to go, you know, we were going to go on a hiking trail, then go to an event to celebrate one of her other friend's success. And I'm like, okay, well, what is it? Like, oh, well, he has this barbecue thing and he made it to television and blah, 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 blah. It's like, you know, I'm glad your friend has success, but I can't celebrate that. And so that's where I draw the line. It's just, given the context of things and where I live, it's all around me. And so my personal philosophy is just that I'm not going to partake in it.
I found, going back to this idea of the vegan stereotype with this person, that people have in their mind about this very pushy person who just talks about being vegan all the time, and that, you know, if you want to find out if somebody's vegan or not, well, don't worry about it because they'll tell you. Well, what I've actually found is the opposite of that, in terms of I don't go around broadcasting it, I'm very happy to speak to people who I feel are open towards it. But more often, I've had situations where I've been out for lunch with people that I don't necessarily know that well, but there'll be somebody that thinks it's funny to offer me chicken, or, you know, and that sends the ripple around the table. So I feel that this pushy vegan stereotype, sure, there's some people like that. Not, I don't think there's actually that many of us, but there is, because it's such a stereotype that people think it's okay to flip that and to be and to mock and make fun and offer chicken and what have you.
Yeah, they participate in the behavior that they don't like.
Yes,
It's
exactly. And
funny how that works.
it's funny how that works. So I generally just react to that in good humor, especially in that kind of situation, because it doesn't necessarily achieve anything to get angry. I think that then that just leads into their going, oh, well, my stereotype and belief about vegans is correct. They're just angry and get upset so easily. You know, I was just having a joke. But there are times when I think there are clear boundaries that need to be drawn. And I know that you've had experience where people have just been obnoxious and rude, and you have just said, no, enough's enough.
Sometimes you have to stand up for yourself. And for the people who do participate in the behavior that they don't like, point it out to them.
I think with friends and family that you interact with regularly, there is a time when you do need to set boundaries. And I think that some people you can let, you know, come and go. If they're not going to be a big part of your life, then that's okay. It doesn't matter. But I do think that there is a point where you have to say, I don't tolerate that, and therefore stick up for yourself. I know that I personally had to renegotiate some family relationships when I became vegan, and this was actually one of the hardest parts of the process for me. And it was so difficult to know the facts about the environmental damage, and particularly the enormous suffering of the animals involved, and for family members not to want to hear this information at first. They've changed quite a lot since then. And this was made much harder for me because we were actually in different continents and we were communicating through either through Skype or messages or whatever. So did you have a similar experience with your friends and family? And if so, how did you work through it?
As far as like friendships and other things, it's just that the way I handle it is that, well, if they're really my friends, then they'll accept me for who I am. And the other thing too is just that it seems that there are people who are afraid to go vegan because of what it might mean for their relationship. You have to consider that if you think this is going to break your relationships, then that tells you the strength of those relationships, the truth of the strength of those relationships in the first place. And that's something psychologically that you need to confront. Don't be afraid to talk about it. People should accept you for who you are. If they can't, then I would say strongly consider who you have around you if they're not going to accept you for who you are.
I would add on to that, that you might be surprised where people are a year or so down the line. Initially, come as such a surprise to people that you've changed that they find it hard to accept. But as time passes and you're able to share information in a really friendly way, in a helpful way, then you might be surprised where you are. I say that as somebody whose husband I would never have thought would go vegan because he's a hunting, shooting, fishing background. You know, it only took a year or so and now he's vegan. So you just don't know what changes other people are going to make. What last words of advice do you have for vegans living in a non-vegan world?
Do your best. Be the best that you can be. Do what you can. You know, we can flip the question.
Yeah.
And this is very provocative to even ask this, but I think it's important to confront, right? In any social movement or any movement, you have to confront this question. Is what about being non-vegan in a vegan world? What would be not just the things that we expect, but the goals that we hit? What would be the cultural zeitgeist? It's difficult, but I think that there's a key there in that, in examining this perspective shift. Because we say that we're not, that, you know, we don't expect this much or we tolerate this much. Now, this is provocative. It's like, what accommodations do we make to those people? And examining that provocative question, it's like, okay, well, I don't want to raise cattle for them to eat, right? So I think that instead of saying what we should or shouldn't do, I think what we should be thinking about is that the message we're getting across. Are we trying to change things or extend? This is a different perspective, especially when we analyze social movements. You know, we're not trying to so much as like change the world in a sense, but we're trying to extend a certain set of humanity and ethics to other parts of society that's currently not there. You know, we're not changing morality per se. We're not saying that, you know, that this is good and this is bad and now what was good is bad and what was bad is good. We're just trying to extend those ethics, those ideas to the rest of society, rather than just certain isolated pockets. Because, you know, veganism goes into climate change, it goes into cruelty, and these things are tied up with other parts of society.
It's very interesting to think about that, because I often feel like I am living in a vegan world, and then I step outside of my little bubble and I'm confronted with things, because I have a completely vegan household. I tend to go and eat in vegan restaurants. My friends here in the US, most of them are vegan. And it's only when I go into places like my workplace that then I'm really confronted with it, that we're, oh, no, the world is not yet vegan. And things become a little bit harder. So I think this vegan world that we envisage is going to be a wonderful place, because I'm certainly very happy in my vegan world. So to think about what would we do with those last few remaining people that haven't quite got there is quite an interesting thing to think about when they're in the minority and we are the majority. And I believe that if we want this civilization to continue, that's where we're going to have to get to. So at some point it will happen. So we'll need to think about it.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for talking us through all that, this topic of vegan identity in a non-vegan world. Certainly been interesting chatting to you.
Yes, thank you. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this Vegan Online Academy podcast. If you have been inspired to start your own vegan journey or would like more support with the vegan journey that you're currently on, please log on to veganonlineacademy.com for more information about our courses.